Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. As always, I'm your host, Larry Jacobs, and thanks so much for listening to today's edition of Education Talk Radio. We really appreciate it. Let me get that music shut down, for goodness sakes. There we go. At any rate, welcome to today's show. Today is Wednesday, August 22nd, and we're thrilled to have you with us today. Whether you're listening live on August 22nd or perhaps later on the archives, which a lot of people do. After all, it is internet radio. All of our shows are archived over at our website, education-talkradio.org, education-talkradio.org, and we tweet over at EduTalk Radio, at EduTalk Radio. So please check it all out. We have all of our archive shows, our schedule, interesting education news, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's really a fun website. A lot of people go over there. Education-talkradio.org. And you can also connect over to higher-education-talkradio.org. And actually, I came up with a new word called clink over. That's where you click on a link. We have a link, so it's a clink. And maybe that'll take over, and I will have donated something in actuality to the lingo of the internet. We're going to have a great show today. I'm going to bring on our guests in just a couple of minutes. They're the authors, Yvette Jackson and Veronica McDermott, of a wonderful book published by ASCD called Aim High, Achieve More, subtitle being How to Transform Urban Schools Through Fearless Leadership. And I want to thank ASCD and in particular Julia over there for putting together today's show. Before I bring Yvette and Veronica on, I want to also thank our sponsor today. Our sponsor, Mind Research Institute, is a strong supporter of both urban education and also ASCD, so it works out really, really nice. Mind Research Institute is a nonprofit education researcher and publisher currently serving over 1,000 schools, over 300,000 students in 24 states. With a neuroscience-based supplemental math program. The program delivers math concepts to students as visual manipulatives on a computer screen using its game-based program called STMath. STMath presents math concepts and skills as visual puzzles without language, which is important, by the way, for ESL kids, et cetera, as well as just the average American student, okay? Students experience solving these math puzzles as a fun but challenging interactive video game with immediate corrective feedback. It's really good stuff. Teachers are at the center of the Mind Research math education process, and Mind Research Institute provides them with a powerful new classroom tool to engage all students and to explain math concepts more deeply. Teachers report quicker progress through the conventional math lessons, and large-scale studies across the country are showing double to triple the math proficiency growth versus comparison schools. That ain't bad, okay? www.mindresearch.net, www.mindresearch.net, and as I said, strong supporters of all education, urban education as well, and also strong supporters of ASCD. So thank you, Mind Research, for sponsoring today's show. And let me bring on Yvette and Veronica one at a time here. Computer is slow today. Let's see. I know. Let's see. Veronica, you're at that 514 number up in Montreal, right?
I am indeed. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Larry Jacobs. It's a pleasure to meet you. We emailed a little bit. This is what I sound like.
I know because I listened in.
Very good. Thank you so much for doing that. And Yvette, you're down on the vineyard, I understand.
I am, Larry, but I wouldn't miss this opportunity.
Well, I appreciate that. And this will only take a half hour or so out of the precious time on the vineyard. Have you been to the Black Dog yet?
Absolutely. I'm going to go buy a T-shirt number 2.
There you go. And have you seen Larry David yet? He's over there.
No, absolutely. I haven't seen him this trip. Last time I did, not this time.
Well, it's a beautiful part of the world. And I got Martha's Vineyard is, of course, the small island off of Massachusetts. And that and Nantucket represent, quote, the Cape and Islands District, right?
That's right. That is exactly right, and it's beautiful.
And Montreal ain't shabby either. My son was up there. I live in Maine.
Oh, that's okay. Right. Oh, so your neighbor,
Well, I am a neighbor, right. We lived in Massachusetts till just recently. We moved up to Maine, to southern Maine, and my son was just up to Montreal for a weekend with his girlfriend.
It's a nice place to go.
It sure is, and close by to here. A lot of people don't realize that, how close it is. Let me give you folks the introduction you so richly deserve. Dr. Yvette Jackson, say hello, Yvette.
Hello, everyone.
Thank you, is the CEO. And Dr. Veronica McDermott, say hello, Veronica.
Hi.
There you go, is regional director at the National Urban Alliance, which is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing professional learning to transform education so all students can experience high intellectual performances, okay? The National Urban Alliance is on Long Island, right, in Syosset, New York?
Yes.
And you have to tell me something, but I don't understand. The website, I want to give it to people, is NUATC.org, NUATC.org, National Urban Alliance. What's the TC stand for?
Teaching for Change.
Thank you. I couldn't figure that one out.
Yes.
Okay, so NUATC.org, okay, and go over there. We're going to talk about all the wonderful things they're doing. The book is published by ASCD, our good friends, and it is called Aim High, Achieve More, okay? And Yvette Jackson, Veronica McDermott, our guest today, wrote it, How to Transform Urban Schools Through Fearless Leadership. And I guess I'll start with Yvette, since you're the top name on my little list here. Okay. Yvette, how long have you and Veronica been working together?
Oh, I would say we've been working together about 7 years, Veronica.
That's correct.
Yes.
So you both started when you were 22. You met when you were 22.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. We've had an accelerated journey.
That's good. That's good. Okay, so we have 7 years together. Is this your first book together?
Yes, but we've written an article together about 2 years ago. Actually, that's the article on which we base this book, and it was also called Fearless Leading. But, yes, this is our first book together. I've done one last year. That was my first book, so this is my second, and this is our first duo.
And how long has National Urban Alliance been in existence?
Oh, about 21 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that we started at Teachers College at Columbia University, and actually that's where the first TC came from in the email address, or the website, rather, when you were asking TC, it was Teachers College, and then we became a nonprofit organization.
Right, and you know, I saw the bio in there, and I saw that you were at Columbia, and I thought it did, but it did, but I couldn't get it to go on the website.
Right,
okay? I thought it meant Teachers College, but
you were right.
Okay. Yeah, because I read the biographies, and I thought it meant Columbia Teachers College, which isn't a bad school. I hear they may make it yet.
Yes, that's true. That's true, and I'm sure that some of the other universities would love to hear you say that, but it is a wonderful place. So I went there also for my graduate school. And then
whenever I go to New York, I have two very close friends. Actually, I'll do a little plug for each of them. Diana Reese teaches, she teaches, I think, at Hunter, and she is one of the world's leading experts in whale communication. She teaches at Columbia Faculty, Marine Mammal Communication, and she has a great book out called Dolphin in the Mirror.
I know the book.
There you go. That's my friend Diana, who's married to.
Oh, that's a great book.
Yeah, who's married. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah.
Who's married to probably my oldest friend in the world, Stuart Feierstein, who heads the biology department at Columbia.
Oh, that's interesting. All right, so then you know it's a wonderful school.
Yeah, it's okay. As I like to tell my friend Stuart, he wrote a great book, by the way. You would love this book. His book is called Ignorance, How It Drives Science.
Okay,
and the fact is that it's not what we know that drives future science, it's what we don't know.
Oh, I love that.
We're more ignorant. The ignorance is a good thing, not a bad thing, because it makes you move forward.
Right, I love
great
that.
Great book.
Thank you.
And short book and really good.
Excellent. We'll have to look at
that. Ignorance, How It Drives Science. And actually, he'll be on the show on Thursday afternoon at 3 o'clock.
We'll listen in.
Please do, because we're going to talk about how that type of theory affects K-12 education. We've already done a show on higher ed. But let's talk about you guys for a second.
Okay.
Your book, Aim High, Achieve More, How to Transform Urban Schools Through Fearless Leadership. And I just must ask, Did you take that word fearless leader from the old Boris and Natasha on Rocket Flight?
You know, not on a conscious level, but since I used to watch it all the time, that really could be.
Right? Yeah, you remember that. A fearless leader going
absolutely.
No, our concept is somewhat different.
It's somewhat different.
I would hope so. I would hope so. Nobody's talking with a heavy Russian accent in it as part of the book. That's not recommended. So talk to me about what prompted you, and either one of you can answer. Yeah, you can fight it out. What prompted you to write this book?
Well, I'll start. You know, when I started teaching, I taught in Yonkers, and I had the great, great opportunity of teaching the same class for 3 years. And the school I was in a very urban part of the city. And what I found out after those 3 years is I had such brilliance in my room. And what happened was the principal at the school decided she wanted to start a gifted program. And she came to me and said, let's try to do this. But this is what really started my journey. This psychologist in the school also came to me and said, you know, I hear that she wants to start a gifted program. How ridiculous, because you know there are no gifted children in this school. And I'm looking at him and I'm saying, he doesn't even teach the children. And what I started realizing,
he said there were no gifted children in the school.
In the school, and he didn't even
teach the psychologist said that.
The psychologist said that. And so what I had to do was start querying, why would he say something like that? And it was the expectations and the perceptions and the stereotypes that came with students who were in urban schools. And then when I started working with the National Urban Alliance, we work all around the country, predominantly in urban areas. And what I saw was there was such fear in so many teachers and leaders about trying to look at how do they take the policies that are constantly looking at student weaknesses and how do you take those ideas of weakness and try to still move students to growth. They were totally, really petrified. There were teachers who just felt like they were in a stalemate in terms of their pedagogy, in terms of their practice. Mm. And what I found was that they had gone into, these are teachers who went into teaching believing that students had a lot of capability. But policies that came out about these students led them to think maybe they weren't right about it. Maybe there wasn't the kind of intelligence that these students are really capable of. And so what we decided when Veronica and I got together, because of the work, as I said, in the districts, I started taking a gifted approach, and I started saying, you know what, when you supply students with the kind of education that starts with belief, that invites them to pursue their intelligence, and then provides them with the kind of strategies and enrichment that students who are labeled gifted get, then you know what happens? These students start acting gifted, too.
Of course.
But the issue really becomes, did all of the leaders, the teachers in the school, have the fearlessness to put aside what these policies were saying and to aim at this direction of giftedness and growth. And there lies also the title, Aim High, aim for
yes.
What we know moves that. And so, Veronica, you want to talk more about that?
Well,
sure,
before you do, Veronica, I do want you to talk about that, but I have to ask you a question, and this is more of a painful question. That attitude, and I hate to even ask the question, but is that racial?
I would say to you that the stereotypes connected with race are there, and let me tell you why specifically. Well, let me tell you what perpetuates that. Even the concept now, you've heard this, the achievement gap. As soon as people talk about the achievement gap, what do they say? Well, there's a gap between the races. And we say, wait a second. There's not a gap between races. What there is there's a gap between a student's intellectual potential and what they're achieving. And when you focus on that instead of saying, let's look at the gap between the races, you're going to then start looking at the kind of practices that can help them. But when you take a policy that says the achievement gap, and when you take the kinds of programs that are associated that say, let's look at the weaknesses, you have to give a lot of time on studying, looking at remediation, then people start associating that concept of weakness and remediation with race. And that's what we are trying to eclipse, that whole idea.
I like that.
Yeah,
I like
we do
that
too. It is our passion.
Yeah, well, it's I can help you what was wrong with the school psychologist at that time. That man was an incompetent boob.
Well, you know, again, it is what I said about the teacher, though. He probably didn't go into psychology originally thinking that, but when you keep looking at the way people are stereotypically designing what's supposed to happen for students, then some people start believing maybe there's something there. And I would also say, as a psychologist, you know, the kind of testing that is traditionally used does not look at the whole scope of how a child can think or what their potential is. And so, you know, I think he was very much affected by the limitations of testing as opposed to looking for what the possibilities are.
Well, that's a very good point. And I do agree with that. And in analysis, that's true. But I'll stand by my sentence. He's an incompetent boob.
Well, okay. He was a nice guy.
Okay, you don't
guy,
have
though.
To say that. I'm saying it. We don't know his name. The heck of it.
Right,
an incompetent
exactly.
Boob.
Exactly.
Okay, so Veronica, the incompetent boob aside, who was the school psychologist, that's unbelievable because they're much better than that. Okay. Talk to me. What prompted you to work with Yvette on the book? And what were the things that came from your career that moved you into this?
Well, it's interesting because in many ways I do believe that the book is sort of the culmination of the career that I had, that I was fortunate enough to have. Talk about being gifted. I was involved in public education since 1970, and by 1985, I was officially out of the classroom, but had the great good fortune of being able to walk in and out of schools throughout the school district that I worked in, which was a large school district on Long Island. And then when I retired as superintendent of schools and started working with NUA, I've had the good fortune of being able to walk in and out of schools all over the country. And I have to tell you that if you've had the privilege of being able to do this, you know that the second you walk up to the door, and certainly the second you walk through that door, you have a sense of what kind of a school you're in. And mm-hmm. over the years, what I started to see was that this notion of fear was driving many, many schools. And it's certainly something that we can all understand, because the policies, the educational policies, and the narrative that's being told about public education over these most recent years has become more and more punitive, more and more blaming educators for things that, in all honesty, they have some control over, but the policies are driving them to take a stance of, if my kids don't perform well, I could be
right.
out of a job.
Right.
Now, I mean, you don't have to be a psychologist, not the boob, but somebody who really knows psychology to understand that that is absolutely the wrong motivation. And you can actually feel it when you go into certain schools. On the other hand, we were working in schools where the same demographics existed, the same terrible narrative was being spun about the people who were in the school, the administrators, the students, the teachers, the community, and yet they were thriving. So the question started to come to mind, why? What is it that's different? And so we began to look closely at what's different, and we began to theorize that, in fact, as we all know, leadership matters, but the kind of leadership has a very different feel about it. It's certainly not the type of leadership where there is a single person at the helm who's in control of everything. Public education today is a very, very, very complex institution, and it requires a leader who's willing to say, you know what, guys, I don't have all the answers, but as a group, as a leadership team, we can fearlessly approach all of the things that are being said about us. We can fearlessly approach all the impositions that come our way, because another thing that becomes very obvious is the worse a school does, the more initiatives are foisted upon the school.
How true. how true.
Yeah, so you know, the question to us was how in fact are certain leaders managing to negotiate this terrible terrain and keep people's spirits high, and the students are performing, and you can see growth, and you can see something that really was missing in a lot of schools, and that was joy. That's what school is supposed to be about. It's an adventure. It's opening your mind. It's having that aha moment it's visceral when it happens. And if you've ever taught, you know when it's happening in your class.
That's true.
So the desire was, how do we recapture that for people? How can we take what we know, because between what Yvette and I know together, there's an awful lot that others can gain from, and why not? Why do we want to hold on to this? It matters so much in people's lives, in educators' lives, in the lives of their students.
Well put, I have to tell you, Veronica, well put. But you keep using the term leader. By the way, let me reintroduce you in case people just tuned in. Aim High, Achieve More is the book written by our guests, Yvette Jackson and Veronica McDermott. The subtitle is How to Transform Urban Schools Through Fearless Leadership, and it's published by our good friends over at ASCD, ASCD.org, if you want to go over there and check that out, okay? And a good fine organization. You talk about leadership, and you keep using the word leader, okay? And I'll plug this over to Veronica, okay? Who is the leader you're talking about, Veronica? Is it the superintendent? Is it the principal? Or is it a nebulous term that means whoever takes charge?
Well, no, it is too important to be nebulous.
Right?
I'm sorry?
Yeah, Viva la Revolution, whoever takes charge.
No, the stakes are too high to be nebulous. The book is actually written for central office administrators and building administrators, because the principals work at both levels, and principals here with the LES, not ALS. A superintendent or a school principal who thinks he or she has the answer is participating in the denying what's really true. You don't have all the answers. You need to have a team around you. And so when we talk about fearless leadership, we are really talking about a team that capitalizes upon four who redefine themselves differently. And they redefine themselves in terms of saying, look, all of us together can be architects of our own destiny. So we talk about leadership being architect, soul friend, minister, and muse. And each one of those terms is very important. But no one person that I've ever met actually can be good at all of the various behaviors that go along with this redefinition. And the redefinition is important also because it empowers people to say, I'm not going to sit around and I'm not waiting for Superman, I'm not waiting for my school to be resourced the way it should be, but there are things that we can tap into that exist within our own environment. So if you're a building principal, it's your faculty members, it's your students, it's your community, it's your families. If you're a superintendent, it's whoever your leadership people are, obviously, assistants, your board, your larger community, the principals, the teachers. I mean, I think that it has to be a shared endeavor. And then what we mean by these terms, architect, minister, soul friend, and muse, is really the heart of the book. And it has to do with how you position yourself and how you think of yourself, because as we know, language is very, very powerful. And so if we view ourselves as ministers, that's really the root of the word administrator.
Right, exactly, sure.
And so what does a minister do? You know, a minister comes between. A minister offers resources. A minister, helps along the journey, if you will. Very simple definition of that. The soul friend is a term that many people are not necessarily aware of, but it is exactly what you would think it was. If I asked you in your own head, what does that conjure up? That conjures up somebody who knows me intimately and, in fact, might know me better than I know myself. And so a soul friend is somebody who acknowledges who you are, but who also sees your potential. Because oftentimes we're our own worst enemies when it comes to doing, you know, to take our vision and make it a reality. And a muse, we all know what a muse is from
yes,
Greek literature. Somebody who inspires us to go way beyond what we ever thought we could do. And so can you imagine working in a situation where those are the people you work with?
It'll be nice,
wouldn't
it?
Yes, it would be nice. It would be nice.
Yeah, I have to ask you a question, though, and I have two questions, okay? And let me just, Veronica, I think you said you were, correct me if I'm wrong, you're superintendent of a Long Island district?
Yes, I was. I retired from that position.
Which one, if I may ask?
Patchogue Medford Schools on Long Island, South Shore of Long Island.
Good. And do you, I think my one of my best friends, Les, taught at Long Beach, which I think is probably close by.
Yes, it's a neighboring district.
There you
yes.
go. He taught math. Yes. He just retired after God knows how many years there. Okay, at Long Beach High School. But and he's living in Las Vegas now. So there you go. Okay, he just moved. All right, to be nearer to for him and his wife to be nearer their daughter. Okay, would that be, were you taught, and I'm asking this, would you consider that an urban district? And I know it's Long Island, but Long Island is a changing demo too.
Yeah, well, interestingly, Patchogue Medford is on the south shore of Long Island. At the time, I was living in Port Jefferson, which was exactly north of it. I think it was 13 miles between from my office door to my home. And Patchogue Medford was a very different place than Port Jefferson. Port Jefferson is right near Stony Brook University.
Mm-hmm.
There are multiple hospitals in the area. And it was really, I mean, a lot of our children's friends had indoor swimming pools, tennis courts. You went down to the South Shore in Patchogue Medford, which historically had been a very wealthy community. It was now a changing community.
Mm-hmm.
It really had some of the schools had fairly high pockets of poverty.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the schools were, I would say, were working class, middle class people. But again,
mm-hmm.
because of the way that the schools are set up, you had some schools that had higher levels of poverty than mm-hmm. others. The other thing is that Patchogue Medford and that whole end of Long Island, over the last number of years, has become a place where immigrants from Central and South America were streaming in. And so we had more and more, our largest growing population was our ESL population.
Hello.
Yeah, so again, you know, people have this notion of the Gold Coast of Long Island. And
Levittown.
And things being very homogeneous, and that's in fact not the case.
Yeah, I know, and that's why I wanted to ask you the question. Yvette, I want to pop back to you for a second, okay?
Sure.
And by the way, again, I want to thank Mind Research Institute for sponsoring today's show with our two authors from this ASCD show, Aim High, Achieve More, ASCD book, excuse me, Aim High, Achieve More, Yvette and Veronica. Now, Yvette, I'm going to go over to you. We're talking about fearless leadership. I'm going to say two words to you and just give me a two-minute review. Michelle Rhee.
Okay. In what way would you like me
to talk about fearless leader? I'm talking about
the concept of fearless leader.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because usually when we talk about this concept of fearless, we're saying going against what seems to have been the norm or what had become the norm. And so I think people usually associate Michelle with a fearless leadership because of going against that concept of unions, wanting to have hold on to positions for teachers, and her believing that one of the first things to need to make change in is looking at teachers and who should still be there, who's still dedicated, who might have been burned out, and how we change
mm-hmm.
the population. So I think that's why she has been associated with this concept of fearlessness. And for us, it goes much further because it looks at not just this punitive, whether it's necessary or not, but a more of a punitive approach to looking at what is it that we can resuscitate in teachers themselves about the idea of their ability to, in fact, elicit this deep potential that students in urban areas have. And that kind of resuscitation is based on teachers needing to be able to move on a belief system that doesn't seem to be prevalent in urban areas, and not by the teachers themselves, but by the outside that's trying to point, like Veronica said, to urban areas and say,
right,
well, they're not doing so well. One, the teachers must not be so good. And in urban areas, we have enormous numbers of fantastic teachers who believe deeply in their students and
absolutely
have worked on these
absolutely
islands of isolation by themselves, trying to do tremendous things. And when you look at the number of students who have come out and have done successful things, you say, you know something, there is a lot of giftedness there. So the idea for us of fearlessness is to say, what? Number one, we're going to start with belief. We believe that these students, I don't care what color they are, I don't care what language they speak, their brains are all the same color. Their brains are gray, which means they all have enormous potential. If we can tap on the right kind of practices to enable that potential to come forward. And that's very different than saying, well, I'm going to start with their weaknesses, as I said earlier. I'm going to have to be very strong and fearless and say, no, I'm not going to be punitive. I'm going to go to the nth degree and look at, let's say, something like neuroscience. You have somebody coming on who's going to be talking about neuroscience,
right,
and
exactly
learning. That whole idea of what do we know about neuroscience now, that the brain is like plastic. It can be molded. It can be shaped with the right kind of experience, that intelligence is not fixed, that, in fact, it can change. But we've got to be able to enrich students. We've got to start with belief, and we've got to be able to move them in the kind of opportunities that we give to students, as I said earlier, who are labeled differently. But I've got to tell you, Larry, you know, I have written blogs and or written for different publications, the Washington Post, et cetera, about this concept of looking at all students as if they have gifts and gifted them,
yes,
gifting them. And I cannot tell you the responses that I have gotten back to that blog where people are saying, that's ridiculous. You know, if you give everybody the same thing, we
give gifted children. I thought you were going to say the opposite.
It's been what there are a lot of people who agree, but the vitriolicness that has come through there with those people who are afraid that if you say everybody has a lot of potential and gifted, then what about just my little group of students or my children? Then are you going to be taking resources from them? And that's the kind of thing that we're battling against, and that's why, again, we get back to this concept of fearlessness. No, if you know more about what everybody should have, then what you can do is you'll still see strengths come out in different ways. That's where that concept of differentiation really applies. But you don't not give to some what you're giving to others because you believe only a few are capable.
Right. And, you know, we're talking about urban schools, but really this is not a book, Aim High, Achieve More, for just the leaders of urban schools.
Correct.
Veronica, you want to expound on
that? The term urban actually, it's explained in the book. It really means any place where you find large numbers of students, or in some instances not large numbers of students, but where you find groups of students who are challenged by poverty, who come from immigrant families, or who are every day facing racism. That extends all over the United States. In our work with NUA, we have worked in, obviously, many urban communities, many suburban communities, and in several instances, rural communities.
Right. That's right. You know,
absolutely.
It's
everywhere. I always find the term urban, being in radio, they call it urban radio, and I always find that a weird euphemism.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Somehow it's stuck and it makes no sense. And I hate to say it again, but it always strikes me as kind of stupidly racial.
Yeah, it is, because, and that's funny you should say that also, because even in our name, National Urban Alliance, we know
yes.
when you are, you have school districts that are urban, meaning there are many predominantly students of color, when they're looking at trying to see what do we do to transform practice for our children, they start Googling names like urban specifically,
yes.
knowing that that really represents them, meaning, you know, students of color. But what we're saying is that the kinds of things that we're fighting against are really applicable to all children, that we are underestimating the vast potential students have. Even from as early as, you know, kindergarten, pre-K, we are underestimating what those children are capable of doing. And so what we're trying to say here is, let's look at what the science is saying.
Yep.
Let's look for practices that are going to make us feel fearless and more confident about what we choose to do with these children, so we can, in fact, say.
And I'm going to steal a line from your book. Really, what you're trying to do, and this is from your book, you're trying to eradicate the crime of squandered potential.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
That's what the book's about, eradicating
exactly.
the crime. I like the word crime. Of squandered potential. That's a good urban term, crime.
It really
so,
is.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
really
so who's,
is.
Who's committing the crime?
Who's
squandered
committing
the potential? Ladies, I have to leave you. We're almost out of time. For
oh, my
sake.
Goodness. It went so fast.
Yeah, it was wonderful. You two are great. Okay.
Thank you.
Are you
so
getting
much.
Together? Are you going to meet in like Manchester, New Hampshire, between Montreal and?
no, actually, but I am going to go in, up and see Veronica in Montreal very soon.
Have a good time. It is a fun town. I can tell
it
you
is.
That much.
It'll
take you to Quebec City too.
Oh yes, we did.
We've done that already.
We've done that.
Well, that's the spirit. It was good. Thank you, ladies. You were
Thanks,
wonderful.
Thanks, Larry. It was great.
Okay.
Thank
Have
you,
a great
Larry.
Day. Enjoy the rest of vacation. I shouldn't say that. Enjoy the rest of summer.
Thank you. You as well. Thanks so much.
Take
Have
care.
A great,
Thanks.
Great
okay.
summer. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was a good interview. That was fun. Dr. Yvette Jackson and Dr. Veronica McDermott, CEO and Regional Director at National Urban Alliance, that's NUATC.org. ASCD.org, published their wonderful book, Aim High, Achieve More, subtitled How to Transform Urban Schools Through Fearless Leadership. Aim High, Achieve More. You can get that book over at ASCD.org. And also check out their website, NUATC, the National Urban Alliance Teaching for Change. Okay, NUATC.org. Again, I want to thank our good friends who are very interested in both ASCD, strong supporters of urban education, our good friends over at the Mind Research Institute. That's mindresearch.net. Teachers are at the center of the Mind Research math education process, and Mind Research provides them with a powerful new classroom tool to engage all students and to explain math concepts more deeply. Teachers report quicker progress through their conventional math lessons, and large-scale studies across the country are showing double to triple the math proficiency growth versus comparison schools. Okay, they have a program that's now in 1,000 schools serving over 300,000 students in 24 states. It's neuroscience-based supplemental math program. It delivers all the math concepts to students as visual manipulatives on a computer screen using its game-based program, which is called ST Math, which presents math concepts and skills as visual puzzles without language. Students experience solving these math puzzles as a fun but challenging interactive video game with immediate corrective feedback. This is a really cool product and a really good product. And again, let me give you those statistics. They are reporting double to triple the math proficiency growth versus comparison schools. And Yvette was saying that with the changing face of education, there are a lot of ESL kids out there. This works great because it is done as visual puzzles without language. So it works. And as I say, it helps to unlock that potential of that barrier that language can sometimes set up. So please check it out, mindresearch.net, www.mindresearch.net. It's the Mind Research Institute. Thank you for sponsoring today's show. Thank you, Julia, over at ASCD for setting up today's show. Thank you, Yvette and Veronica, for A, writing a great book, and B, being my guest today. We're going to have this show archived over at education-talkradio.org in just a couple of minutes. I'm Larry Jacobs. Today is August 22nd. A lot of you, I just talked to people yesterday, they're back at school already. Okay, if you're back at school, have a great year, but listen to us all the time. Check out our archives. If you're not back yet, enjoy the rest of the summer. We'll be back with you soon. Check our schedule. Bye-bye.